All right. Good morning, everyone. So we are picking up. Today's daf is Pei 80. We are picking up Ayin Tes Amud Beis, the Mishnah. Okay. So it says, the Mishnah says the following. Interesting ideas today. Hamotzi Hotzas Amichse Isha. If a man goes ahead and spends money on his wife's property. So this is talking about, of course, Malug property. So a husband has his wife's Malug property, and he invests in the property to go ahead and beautify it, to improve it. So what happens? Hamotzi Hotzas Amichse Ishto. Hotzi Harbei Ba'achal Kima. So we'll say, even if he spent a lot of money on improvements, and he only benefited from the land very little, or kima va'achal harbe, or he invested very little and he enjoyed a lot of the peros. Masha hotzi hotzi masha achal achal. What he has spent is spent, and what he has consumed is consumed. Masha achal achal. Hotzi v'lo achal. We're supposed to say, what the Mishnah is saying over here is like this. That unless you have the following situation, a man gets married, he invests a lot of money into his wife's nechse malog, and a year later they get divorced. So I might have thought that he could demand repayment for the investment that he made in her Nisei Malog. Says the Mishnah, no, he cannot. Whatever he invested, and whatever he consumed. With one caveat. Hotzi v'lo achal, if he invested money in the Nisei Malog, but what? Never benefited from the payros, then in that case, Yishava kama hotzi, he has to swear how much, he went ahead and he spent v'yitol, and he may go ahead and take that amount. He may go ahead and collect that amount from her. So we'll say, so this idea that whatever he spent is spent, and he cannot recapture it, that's only if he benefited at least in some minimal amount from the nechse malug. But if he did not benefit at all from the nechse malug, then he has the right to go ahead and demand repayment from her. Again, the Mishnah says he has to take a shvuah, how much money he spent, and then he could get repaid for his investment in her nechse malug. Says the Gemara v'kama kima. Suppose I say, now the Mishnah said that even if he spent a lot of money and only ate a little bit of the peros, so then halacha l'maisa, he can't demand any kind of repayment for his investment in the nechse malug. So how much is a little? How much is a little benefit? So the Gemara says, I'm Rabbi Yassi, afilu grogros achos, even one dried fig. However, v'husha achra derech kavod, but Abba said, this is assuming that he ate it derech kavod. Ate it derech kavod means that he ate it in a bakavodik, in an appropriate way, in a meal. So he sat down at the table, he had a napkin tucked in, right, the fork in. I don't know if you need a fork in after the dried fig. But the idea is, the Gemara is coming to exclude a case of, let's say, where he just popped the fig in his mouth in the field. That's not called significant benefit. Significant benefit will only be when he enjoyed it in the context of a meal. Amar Rabbi Abba, top of pay. Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rabbi Rav, afidu shigra de tamri. So the Rebbe says, so it's machlokis as to how much is a little. So Rabbi Abba said the name of Beirav, that's what? Even a cake of pressed figs. So this is what Rebbe said, there's a little bit more than just simply one grogus, one dried fig. This is Rabbi Abba saying even a cake of pressed figs. By Rabbibi, chuvtza de tamri mai. What about us now? So chuvtza de tamri is a cake of pressed figs, but these figs have already been pressed. Now what does that mean? So remember, they would make date beer. So they would press the moisture out of the dates, and after you had that leftover date, they would make that into a cake of pressed figs, and people would eat that afterwards. So they asked. So Rabbi Abba said, if you eat a cake of pressed figs, then the mice, again, that's considered to be benefiting from a nechse malug. So they asked, Rabbi Bibi asked, well, what about if it's not a cake of regular pressed figs, but it's a cake of pressed figs, of figs that have already themselves been pressed? Does that make sense? Right? The figs have already been pressed. Because when we say a cake of pressed figs, what that means is you take figs and you just press them together and they become a cake. This is saying the figs have been pressed, have been squeezed beforehand. Then you take the leftover figs and you push them into a cake. So does that, if you eat that, is that considered to be benefit from the nechse malug, and therefore would prevent him from being repaid for any expenditures he made? So the Gemara says, my teku. So the Gemara says, we don't know. Lo achla derech kavod mai. They both say, now here's what's interesting. Let's say he didn't eat it derech kavod. So meaning he didn't sit down at the table, didn't eat it in a meal. Is there still an amount which if he does eat, even if it's not derech kavod, constitutes significant benefit, which would then preclude him again from getting repaid from the wife after divorce. So Amr Ulav, Ula said, Pligi Bachi Amar Rabbi Ma'arava, to Amar Rabbi Ma'arava, so argued over this, Chad Amar Biki Isser, the Chad Amar Biki Diner. One said, Rabbo said that if he consumes an Isser's amount of produce, even if it's not derech covered, that's called substantial enough to be considered as if he benefited from the Nechsei Malug, which would then prevent him from collecting or recollecting the money that he invested into the Nechsei Malug. And the other opinion say, no, it's not an Isser, but rather, again, it's a larger amount. Rather, again, it's a dinar's amount. Okay, so machlokes. Armory dani de Pumbadisa. So the dani of Pumbadisa said, Av Rav Yehuda uvda b'chavilei zimuros. So Rav Yehuda paskind in a case of Ros, is actually very interesting. So in this case over here, what happened is the husband went ahead and he took grapevines and he fed them to his animals. So this is the wife's Nechsei Malug property. And he goes ahead and he fed the vines. This is the right because the vines are the peros also. So he fed some of the vines to the animals. So the interesting shaila is like this. Now they're getting divorced. And he invested $2,000 in the property. He wants to recapture that investment. He wants to be repaid back from the investment. But the shaila is what? Now, up until now, the Mishnah was talking about where he himself benefited from the Nechsei Malug. What happens if he fed from the Nechsei Malug to his animals? Does that count as his benefit, which would then preclude him from recapturing the amount spent on the Nechsei Malug? So the Gemara says over here, Popadisa, they said, Rabbi Yehuda Avad Ubdu Bechavile Zimur. Rabbi Yehuda paskind, that when a husband feeds the vines to his animals, that's considered as if the husband is getting benefit from the Nechsei Malug. And therefore what? And therefore, Lemaisa, again, he would not be permitted to go ahead and ask for repayment from the wife for the investment in the Nechsei Malug property. And Rabbi Yehuda goes according to his reasoning. Why don't Rabbi Yehuda? Because what Rabbi Yehuda holds, that Rabbi say, if a person, now, it literally means you ate Arla. Arla, remember, refers to the fruit of the first 3 years. Shviyas, Shemitah produce. Kilayim, forbidden mixtures. Rabbi say, the halacha in all of these cases is that the only thing that's prohibited in these situations are the fruits. But let's say the vines upon which they grow are not prohibited. Rabbi Yehuda held that lemaisa, if a man feeds from these vines to his animals, i.e. vines of Arla, vines of Shviyas, vines of Kilayim, as much as the fruit are prohibited, if he fed his animals, so this shows that he has a chazaka on the land. So we're not going to get into the laws of chazaka. The point that we see over here is that what? Is that Rabbi Yehuda holds that the act of feeding vines to one's animal is in fact considered to be a halachically significant act. Amr Rabbi Yaakov, Amr Rabbi Chista. So we'll say, therefore, again, the Gemara is saying over here is that Lemaisa, Rabbi Yehuda hold, and that's how the Gemara is passing halach Lemaisa as well, that when we say that the husband has to get benefit from the Nechsei Malug in order not to be able to ask for repayment for his expenditures on behalf of the Nechsei Malug, it's true if the husband himself benefited, but it's also true if what? If the animals gave of the peros of the Nechsei Malug to his animals. That's considered to be husband's benefit as well, and he would not be able to recapture expenses of the Nechsei Malug. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Chista, Motzi Otsos on Nechsei Ishto Kitana, Ki Motzi on Nechsei Acher Dami. Let's listen to this. Rav Chista says, what if a man is married to a Kitana? Now Rashi points out over here, this is a Drabanon marriage. So this is talking about, let's say again, brother or a mother marry off the daughter, and now let's say Rabbi says she comes into the marriage with Nechsei Malug, she comes into the marriage with property, and husband goes ahead and uses his money to fix up the Nechsei Malug. Then they get divorced, or she does miyun, something of that sort. So Rav Chista says that Lamaisa, investing in the property of a woman, of a wife who's a ketana, is like spending money to improve the land of someone else. I will say now, again, we're going to see this. We've actually spoken about this in our Monday morning bagels here. If you're about to come along and invest money to go ahead and improve someone else's property, we're going to see, assuming that it was a needed improvement, they have to pay you for that. Now we'll discuss how that is a little, how that works. But the idea over here is that Lamaisa, investing in the Nechsei Malug of an Isho Zekitana is like investing in the property of someone else, which means that technically speaking, you can ask for repayment for your expenses. So that's even true if what? Even if he benefited from the peros, he still has the ability to ask for repayment from the Kitana, or I say from the estate of the Kitana, for monies spent. My time was, but why? So I will say, so now this is strange, because this is saying that Kiddushei Kitana, marriage with the Kitana, is going to be different than other cases of marriage. Because in other cases of marriage, the Mishnah already told us that as long as you benefited from the peiros, you may not ask for repayment for your expenditures on behalf of the nechseim alug. But yet here we're saying that in the case of the ketana, you absolutely could ask for repayment even if you benefited from the peiros. So why is this different? To which the Gemara says, avdu barabana takanto, ki hechi dilo nafsedinu. So the rabbis went ahead and made this takana in order that a husband will take proper care of the wife's nechsei malug property. Because they both say, there's a concern in the case of the ketana that a man knows that she can always do miyun. And remember again, miyun is this strange kind of situation where the wife could just simply say, I don't want this anymore, and she's out. And there's no longer any kind of marriage. So because of that, a husband may go ahead and be tempted to just simply burn through the property, get as much usage as I can out of it, before she's amima enes. Therefore, in order to ensure that he takes proper care of the property, we say to him what? We say to him, look, take care of the property and know that whatever monies you put into the property, what's going to happen? You'll get paid back. You'll be able to recapture your investment. So once he's going to be able to recapture his investment, there's a vested interest to take care of the property over the duration of the marriage. But say there was a particular woman who inherited 400 zuz in Bechozoi, a faraway place, Bechozoi. Listen to this. Azal gavra afik shis mea. So we'll say what happened. Her husband went on her behalf to retrieve the Yerusha, and it cost him 600 zuz to travel to Bechozoi to get the Yerusha. So he spent, okay, obviously he's not the guy managing the money, right? Or maybe he is and they're in trouble, right? So the idea is he spent 600 zuz to get to Beit Chozoi to go ahead and retrieve the Yerusha. So what happened? So what happened? So he went ahead and he's bringing back the 400 zuz. Bahadi de ka'asi yitzarach lechad zuza. So we'll say, so on his way back, he's running short on money and he needed an extra zuz for his travel expenses. V'shakal minayhu. And he took that extra zuz from the 400 zuzim that were his wife's inheritance. So he borrowed one zuz from that inheritance. What happened? Also, the Kamed Rabbi Ami. Now again, the bottom line of the story is now they're getting divorced. So they came before Rabbi Ami. So Amarle Masha Hotz Rabbi Say. Now that they're getting divorced, the husband comes back and he says like this. He says, look, all right, if we're getting divorced, I want my 600 zuz back that I went ahead and I had to spend on retrieving her 400 zuz Yerusha. So what happened? Amarle Masha Hotzi Hotzi Umasha Achal Achal. To which Rabbi Ami responded, well, look, normally I would pay you back, except you benefited from her nechsei malug. How did you benefit from the nechsei malug? You borrowed the one zuz. You took the one zuz for your travel expenses. So because you got benefit, quote unquote, from the nechsei malug, again, that's the ruling of the Mishnah. Whatever benefit you got, and you cannot recapture expenses. So Amrulei, so they said to Rabbi Ami, what are you talking about? Amrulei Rabbanan Rabbi Ami, Rabbanan says to Rabbi Ami, Hani mi l'heicha dachal peira. So that's true. Bless you. The Mishnah's ruling is when the husband benefits from the nechsei malug. Ha-karna ka'achol. So we'll say, remember again, so Rabbanan say to Rabbi Ami, this was not an example of the man benefiting from peros. This was a man borrowing money from the keren, borrowing money from the principal. V'hotsohi. And furthermore, again, it wasn't his benefit, but rather, again, it was part of the expense of retrieving the principal itself. This can't be called benefiting from the peros of the nechsei malug. To which Rabbi Ami said, you know what, you're right, I agree with that. Im kein, havile hotzi v'lo achel. Therefore, this would be a case, ultimately, again, of where the husband spent money on retrieving the nechsei malug, or on improving the nechsei malug, and did not get any benefit from the peros. So this would be a case of where, again, he spent money and no benefit from the peros, and therefore, in that case, yishava kama hotzi, you have to swear how much you spent, v'yitol, and you could go ahead and recapture your money. So you need a shvua, you need a shvua shvua. So again, this makes a lot of sense, because first of all, the usage of inheritance money is not called benefits from peros. The money itself is the keren. So if I said to Rabbi Ami, this is not benefiting from peros of nechsei malug, this is actually taking expenses of the nechsei malug itself and using it to help retrieve the nechsei malug. If that's the case, again, he's not benefiting from the peros. Therefore, again, Rabbi Ami said, you're right, take a shvua as to how much you spent and collect it. So yishava kama hotzi. Also, remember the Mishnah said that the Rabbi say again, this is the last case in the Mishnah, that if he did not go ahead, if he spent money on the nechsei malug, but did not go ahead and he spent money on improvements, but he did not go ahead and benefit at all from the peros and nechsim alug. He takes a shvua and he collects his money. Rabbi Asi, v'hu sheyesh shevach keneged hotzah. Rabbi Asi makes a very strange statement. That is only true assuming that what? That there is shevach, that there is improvement corresponding to the expense. So Marcel, my hilchasa, what are you talking about? Rabbi, this is what it means. Shim haya shevach yeser al hotzah. We'll say, so let's say again, the improvement that he made to the land was greater in value than the actual expenditure. Notel as hotzah below shavua. He can go and he can take the expenses, his expense without a shavua. So I'm like, Rava said, imkin asila rume. So people could easily exploit this. Ela amar Rava, this is what it means. Shim haya hotzah yisera al shevach, ein lo ela hotzah shir shevach ubishvua. So Rav said, this is what it means. Rav said, let's say it turns out that the amount of money that he spent to improve the land is greater than the actual valuation of the improvement. So meaning he went ahead, he spent $1,000, but the truth is, as a result of everything he put in the land, only appreciated by $500. So what is the halacha? He only gets the lower of two amounts, which is what? Either, again, appreciation or expenses. And either way, he can't collect either of those amounts without what? Without a shavua. So we'll say, so bottom line, and remember again, I want to be clear, this is only in a very specific case where he invested money in the nechsei malug, but did not what? But did not get any benefit from the peros. He did not get any, for whatever the reason, didn't get any benefit from the peros. In that case, so again, if he didn't benefit from the peros, Chazal say, then he's entitled to get back his investment. But his investment is capped at the lower of the two amounts of either land appreciation or actual money spent. So the Gemara goes and asks a question. Well, this is interesting. Let's say the husband hired sharecroppers to work his wife's nechsei malug. Rashi says, Shahori Arisin, Benichse Ishtal Little Mechza Ushlish Va'amad Vigarsha Mishachal Gimar. Both says, listen to this case. So Yaakov and Rachel are married. Yaakov hires sharecroppers to work Rachel's Nechse Malog. What happens? Right after, 1 month in, Yaakov has already consumed a couple of dried figs, right, at a meal. So he's already benefited from the Nechse Malog. Rachel decides to get divorced. And now what happens? Well, so here's the issue. The issue is there's a whole bunch of sharecroppers who need to be paid. So the shaila is, what's the status of the sharecroppers? So the Gemara says, on one hand, we could say, Mahu, Adai to the Baal Nachis. Do we say that the sharecroppers themselves are an extension of the husband? Istalikli Baal, Istalikaluhu. And therefore, if the husband's interest in the Nechsei Malug is no longer present, their interest in the Nechsei Malug is no longer present. Odilma, the other possibility is, Adaita de Aranochis, they know the sharecroppers are there because the land needs to be farmed. The Araki Kaima la Arisi Kaima, and the land itself still needs, no matter what their marital arrangement, the land still needs to be worked, and therefore the sharecroppers would have the right to go ahead. Look at Rashi. La Aris Kaima im lohoridum abal haisehimo ridilasoharisan. If the husband had contracted them, then who would have? The wife would have, and therefore, again, they're going to still be entitled to their payment for their services. So an interesting chakira. Are the sharecroppers considered to be an extension of the husband? And therefore, lemaisa, again, if the husband is removed from the nechsei malug, they're removed also. Unar, the land needs to be farmed. And therefore, lemaisa, again, what does it matter if it's the husband who's hiring them or the wife needs to be hiring them? It needs to be done. And therefore, lemaisa, their arrangement should still stand. Maskif la Rava. Maskif Rava Barav Chanan Maishna Me'ayori L'Soksa De'Chavero V'Nata Shelo B'Shus. So why is it different in the following case? I go into my friend's field and I plant it without his permission. Then what's the halacha? Shamin Lo. He gets paid for his services. These are interesting cases. Let's say again, I'm a farmer and I have a field and I planned on planting my field next week. Reuven wakes up. Reuven was at the Musilas Yisharim Shir. He learned about the Zrizos. He said, you know what? I'm going to be Zaras with Silber's field. He shows up the next day and he plants my field. He plants my entire field. I say, Reuven, that's wonderful, so nice. But then, of course, again, Chesed has a price tag also. So he gives me the bill for his services. So I say, Talocha. Talocha is, if he provided for me an objective service, assuming that the quality of the work is good quality of work, I'm obligated to pay him. Again, this is assuming that this is work that I would have wanted done. Meaning, I will say, if somebody shows up in my backyard and plants wheat in my backyard, again, I say thank you very much, but I did not plan on turning this into farming land. That's a different shaila. But again, assume that this is a land that was going to be planted, and even keeping it simpler, it was produce that I would have planted as well. Everything that I would have done myself, but he did it for me. The halacha is, I have to pay him. Even though I could say, I didn't hire you, I didn't want you to do it, I was ready to do this myself, I still have to pay him. However, again, the yadu ala tachtona. But Rabbi said, ultimately, again, we'll call him Reuven. Reuven, the guy who went ahead, who showed up, and he planted my field, he has the lower hand in this. Rabbi said, now we're not going to get into it. If you look at Rashi, he says, shomalo v'yadu ala tachtona, lito hayitzia kishir shevach, kido amr bab matzia v'ashoal, v'hacha amr bali seluki b'lo klum. So I said, the idea, yadu ala tachtona means that ultimately, he goes ahead and he also will be limited to the lower of two amounts of land improvement versus expenses. So meaning he doesn't get paid as if I hired him independently, so he's capped. But the point is, he gets paid. Now the point that he gets paid indicates that if somebody does something that is objectively beneficial to your property, then what? Then halacha l'maaseh, you're obligated to go ahead and compensate them. So in this case over here where the sharecroppers were hired, what's the havamina that if when they get divorced and the husband no longer has a share in the property, that the sharecroppers wouldn't get paid for their services? Of course they should get paid for their services. They're rendering an objective beneficial service to the wife. To which the Gemara says, no. Hasam leka inish tatarech. Acha ikabal tatarech. See, there's a difference, because we'll say in the other case where Reuven shows up and works my land, the assumption over there was that there was no one else presently who was doing the work. Even though I was ready to do it a week later, presently there was no one doing the work. In the case of the Nichsi Malug, there is a husband who is responsible for overseeing that land. Therefore, because it's his job to oversee that land, it's his responsibility to do the farming. Therefore, again, I did not need the sharecroppers. So my havyalo. So we'll say, so what is the bottom line? Meaning, what happens to the sharecroppers? So we'll say, you remember, it's a very specific case where husband hired the sharecroppers to work on the next simulog. Husband benefited from the peros. Now they're getting divorced, which means, again, he has no recourse against her for any type of compensation for money spent. But the shaila is, what happens to the sharecroppers? Are the sharecroppers removed as well? Or the sharecroppers, are they there for the husband? They're there for the land. So what's that halacha? Amrev hunabreid Rav Yoshua, chazinan I bal aris. Also, listen to this. We look at the husband. Is the husband himself a sharecropper? Meaning, is the husband himself someone who is capable of taking care of the land? So if he was, then istalik le bal istalik aluhu. So I'll say, if the husband himself was capable of taking care of the land. If you look at Rashi, second to last wide line, I bal ze arisu, if it was a sharecropper, Viodea betiv arisos, and he knows ultimately how to go ahead and properly sharecrop. I don't know if that's the word, sharecrop. Yeah, good. Properly farm. So what's that halacha? Shim lo yardu ilu elu hayuhu atzma ovda. So again, if the sharecroppers wouldn't come, then he would have done it. Then what? Istalik leibal istalik eluhu. Then when the husband is removed, ultimately from the land, the sharecroppers are removed as well. Because Rashi says, istalik eluhu, da amr luhu, kamef sadisu li, di ilo nachstinu, have ihu nachis, v'avid v'lo have shakla ashtamiti. Because wife could say, listen, you know what? I have nothing to do with you guys. As far as I was concerned, my husband was supposed to take care of the land that he wanted to bring in other people. That's not my problem. I have no relationship with you. I have no connection with you. And I have no obligation to you because this responsibility was really on my husband's shoulders. So the Gemara says, but if the husband was not a farmer, he would not know how to take care of the land, then arla arisi kaima. Then Abosai, in that kind of case, she would have had to anyway have hired someone to take care of the land, and therefore, again, these sharecroppers would have the right to go ahead and remain and ultimately be compensated for their services. Ibailu, Baal Shemachar Karka LaPeros Maur. Was another interesting case. So remember, again, husband has peros of his wife's Nechse Malog. Let's say he sells those peros rights to someone else. He goes and he sells the peros to someone else. So we'll say, so what is the halacha? Rashi says, Shemachar Karka LaPeros, Machar la'achirim karka malug, sheyasa lokeach biyochal peros. Right, so he goes and he wants to sell to other people nechse malug, that the lokeach should go ahead and work the field and eat the fruit. But the title, of course, he can't sell title. The title remains to the woman. So what's the halacha? Mau. Mi aminan mai dikani le akni. Do we say, well, look, we'll say in general, you have a right to sell anything that you are entitled to. So the peros are his, and therefore he has the right to sell the rights to the peros if he chooses. Oh, on the other hand, Dilma Kita Kin Rabbanan Peros, the Baal, Mishum Revach Besa. Or maybe on the other hand, no. Avosai, when the Rabbanon gave the husband the peiros of her nechsei melug, that was what's called for revach beisar. Revach beisar means what? For literally the benefit of the, bless you, benefit of the house. If you look at Rashi, mishum revach beisar, sheyachnis haperos lebeisar, v'yeh mazon habayit, matzui v'yetiv la. The point of giving him peiros was for what purpose? To benefit the household. That there should be food, that there should be ample supply, that there should be extra money. The idea is that peiros are supposed to be used as an investment in the household, but he doesn't have the right to go out and sell it to someone else. So we'll say, so again, these are the two ways to look at it. On one end, you can say he has the right to sell it, because we'll say it's his. And if it's really his, he can do with it as he pleases. On the other hand, no, it's his for purposes of what we call revach bayis, benefit of the home. But he does not have the right to use them in a way that benefits someone other than the home. Aval zabunilo. So what's that halacha? Yehuda Mar Bar Merei Mar Mishmei de Rava Amar Masha Asui Asui. So what's the name of Rava? They said what's done is done, meaning that he could sell it, no problem. Rapapa Mishmei de Rava. Rapapa's the name of Rava. No, Lo Asa Velo Klum. He has his action is absolutely meaningless. Amar Rapapa Hadi Yehuda Bar Merei Mar La Befeir Shitmar El Mechlala Itmar. So we'll say the statement of Yehuda Mar Bar Merimar, that what's done is done, that he could sell the peiros, was not said explicitly, but rather was understood by inference through an episode. Dahahi isisa da'ili le legavra tarti amsa. So there was a particular woman who, when she came into the marriage, brought two maidservants with her. That was her nechsei melug. She brought two maidservants with her into the marriage, and what happened? So I talked to him. So azal gavra nasiv isachrisi. The husband went and he married another woman. Now, we'll say again, still married to the first, but he came along and he married another woman. What happened? And he took one of the maidservants and he gave this one of the maidservants to his second wife. What happened? So we'll say what happened. So wife number one comes before Rava. And what happened? She starts yelling or discussing vigorously, right? What is he doing? He's taking one of my maidservants and he's giving it to his new wife. That's not right. And what happened? Lo ashkechba. Rava did not pay attention to her claims. Now I will say, man dechaza, one who saw this, savar mishum de savar, masha asa asui. Now I will say, if you were there, you were present, and you saw this episode, you would assume that the reason why Rava paid no heed to her claim was because, again, I will say, remember, the usage of those maidservants represents peiros. And Rava holds that what? That perhaps husband has the right to do with peiros as he pleases. So if he wants to allocate those peiros towards his new wife, and even though, again, it's the nechsei melug of his old wife, he has every single right to do that. So therefore, again, I will say, so you would have thought that that was the logic of Rava, but in reality, Velohi, that's not the reason. Mishum revach pesa. In fact, Rava holds, in actuality, that lemaisa, the whole reason for peiros is because of revach bayis, is because ultimately we want there to be more available for the home. And in this case, v'haka revach. See, in this case, where ultimately he takes the maidservant of wife number one and allocates her for use for wife number two, there's still revach pesa. Why is there still revach pesa? Because we'll say they're all part of the same household. So lemaisa, the fact that now he's allocating the usage of maidservant number one or maidservant number two for wife number two, lemaisa does not in any way diminish the revach, the not income is the wrong word, but we'll call it the sustenance, the benefit for the household. It's still, everything is still within the same family, within the same household, therefore it's not a problem. Ve'hochasa, and what is the halacha? Bal shemachar karka laperos, Lo asa v'lo klum. And we'll say, so bottom line, halach l'maisa, how do we paskin? Husband has the right to enjoy the peiros. Husband does not have the right to sell the peiros. And that is the halacha. My time, what's the reason? Amar Abai, Amar Chayshin and Shematachsev. Because we'll say, remember, this is very dangerous. Because if you sell off peiros of Maluk property to a third party, what's going to happen? So logically, what a person is going to do is they're going to try to maximize the quickest return on that property. Why? Because we'll say, if you buy a husband's peiros of the nechsei melug, there's one thing you live with incredible uncertainty. What's the uncertainty? We'll say, again, they may divorce. If they divorce, and by the way, it's not just divorce, she could even die. Because depending on, remember, we learned about ksuvas ben emdichrin, it could very well be that even if she dies, this property is going to go to her heirs. So the ma'isa, if you are a purchaser of this, your goal would be extract as much from that property as you can in the shortest amount of time, which ultimately will lead to you neglecting the property. So therefore, because no one's going to take care of the maluk property like the husband, therefore we do not want the husband in any way. We do not want him selling the peros of, or right to this peros. Therefore, aloch al maisa, he has rights of usage, but does not have rights of sale. Rava amr mishum revach besa. Rava says, no, the reason why we want to go at, Rava agrees that the husband can sell the peros, but he disagrees as to the reason. Rava says, the reason he can't sell peros is because revach beisa, because we want the benefit of the peros to be felt in the household itself. So my binai, what's the practical difference between Abaye and Rava? Because most remember, Abaye and Rava are both agreeing that husband can't sell peros. But Abaye is saying because we're afraid that the lokech, the purchaser of the peros, is going to ruin the property. And Rava's concern is that we want ultimately revach beisa, so we want the peros to be used for the benefit of the home. So my binai, what's the practical difference? Ika binai, number one, ara de mikrav lemasa. If the land, the nichse mulug, is close to the city, Rava says, Rashi points out, if it's close to the city, the husband could go check on it, and therefore the purchaser will be reticent to go out and simply ruin the land because someone's going to be checking in on it. Inami bal arisu. The other nafkamina would be, if lemaisa, again, the husband is a sharecropper. So if the husband is a sharecropper, then in that case, Rabosai, the husband, the purchaser would not be working the land himself. Rather, the husband would be giving him the peros. Inami zuzi v'ka'avdibu isko. The other possibility is that the husband goes in and takes the money that he gets from the nichsei melugin. What does he do? He invests in business. In which case, Rabosai, what? There still be revach bayis. There still be benefit or income for the home. But the concern of ruining the property would still apply. Says the Mishnah. So Rabosai, bottom line, halacha lemaisa, that is very interesting, is that although husband enjoys the rights to the peros, lemaisa, again, he does not have the rights to sell those peros. Says the Mishnah, Shomeres Yavam Shnafel Nechasim. Rabosai, if a woman who is waiting for Yibum inherits property, now Rabosai, so this is what he's talking about a case. Rachel is married to Yaakov. Yaakov dies without children. Now Yaakov has a surviving brother, Reuven, and now Rachel is waiting to do Yibum. But what happens in the midst of waiting to do Yibum, while she's a Shomeres Yavam, she inherits property. Her father dies, and she is the sole heir, so she now inherits property as she is waiting for Yibum. So what's the halacha? Modim beishamai ubeisilel shemocheres vinosenes v'kayim. So we'll say beishamai beisilel agree that what? She is permitted to go ahead and sell that property and give that property, and her sale stands. So we'll say again, remember we've spoken about this concept before in different stages of marriage. We spoke about it in pre-erusin, erusin, nisuin. Now this is a different case. She's waiting for Yibum, but she inherits property. So the halacha is she could do with that property as she pleases. Now the chiddush of here, of course, is that even though there's a connection to the Yavam, remember we remember from our Yavamas days, there's a Zeka, there's a connection to that Yavam, nevertheless that Yavam has no claim over her property, and therefore she could do with that property as she pleases. Mesa, now what happens if we'll say if she died? So Mayasu Biksuvasa, what should they do ultimately with her Ksuva? And property that goes in and comes out with her. That refers to Nichsei Malug. So let's say she dies. Let's say she dies while she is waiting for Yibum. So what happens to her property? Now remember, there are two different parts of property. There's her ksuva that she's entitled to, and there's the Nichsei Malug that she brought into her first marriage. So what's the halacha? So remember, there are two different sets of inheritors over here. There's what's called Yoshe'a Bal. Now, Yoshe'a Bal refers to the deceased husband's family, right? So that man, his brothers, his father, whoever's alive, and Yoshe'a Av, Rabosai, means inheritors of the father, means her inheritors. Her inheritors. So Beshameh suggests, let the two sets of inheritors, the husband's, the now deceased husband's inheritors, and the wife's inheritors, let them split up the assets. Ubeisum, Beisum, say no. Nechasim becheskasam, uksuva becheskas Yoshe'a Bal. So we'll say, now what does this mean? So Beisil says that property remains with its chazakah. Property remains with its chazakah. So Rashi points out over here, Beisil om nechasim ditzon barza b'ches kasan. Well, actually, the Gemara is going to say what Beisil means. But Beisil says that the property remains in its chazakah, and ksuva b'ches kas yoshe'a bal. And so we'll say, so the ksuva remains with its chazakah, and its chazakah is that it's owned by the husband, so to speak. Again, a husband's dead in this case. Therefore, the ksuva properties, or properties pledged for the ksuva, will ultimately go ahead and will go to the inheritors of the husband. But other properties ultimately again will remain with their chazaka, namely nechasim ha-nechnasim v'ayotzim ima b'cheskas yosheav. So for example, her nechsei meluk property, which is property that originally came from where, Rabosai? Came from where? Right, her father goes back to the wife's inheritors. So Beis Hillel says, no, we're not going to do like a 50-50 split. That doesn't make sense. Rather, again, properties associated with husband and husband's family will go to husband's. So ksuva will go to husband's family. But her nichsei mulug stays with her family. Hiniach echav maos. We'll say, what happens if the deceased brother left his wife money? So we'll say, now this could be, it's also talking about a case where already Yibum was already performed. So what happens then, Lemaise, in that case, after Yibum was performed? Husband left behind money. So what's the halacha? Yilakach behen karkav ochal peros. So they purchase property, land, with that money. It becomes nechsei malug. And ultimately, again, and the new husband, the yavam, enjoys the peros. Peros at lushim in a karka. What happens if you have produce that is detached from the earth? Yilakach behen karka. Ultimately, you sell that off, use the money to buy karka, to buy land, vu ochal peros. And again, the yavam, who's now the husband, will go ahead and get benefit from the peros. Hamichubarn bekarka. What happens again? I'll say if she is left with produce that is attached to the ground. Rabbi Meir is the same thing from the last Mishnah. Rabbi Meir says, Shaman also kame in yafim beperos, kame in yafim below peros. We evaluate how much is the land worth with the produce, how much is it worth without the produce. Vamosa yilakach ben karkum. We use that difference to purchase a parcel of land. Vu ochal peros. And the yavam, now husband, goes ahead and eats the peros. Chum the chum say, peros amichubarn bekarka shalo. Produce that is attached to the land is his. Hatlusha min akarka, that which is detached from the ground, kolakodim zacha bahen. Whoever gets it first acquires it. Namely, kadam hu zacha, if he gets it, it's his. Zacha, kadma hi yilakach ben karka vocha peros. If she gets it first, then that produce is sold. Proceeds used to purchase real estate, and he benefits from the peros. Kansa, I will say now we're moving forward on the timeline. Yavam marries the Yavama. Harehi ki ishtra l'chol davar. She is like his wife for all matters. Bilvad shetehik suvasa al ko'al nichse baila harishon. We'll say, we've learned this before. There's one interesting exception when it comes to Yibum, which is what? That her clerk suva is not upon the Yavam. Her ksuva is in fact upon what? Upon the assets of the now deceased husband. So remember, what happens to those assets of the deceased brother? Those now become the assets of the Yavam. But the idea is that the lien of the ksuva only devolves upon the assets of the deceased brother, never devolves upon the assets of the Yavam. Lo yomar lo, the Yavam cannot say to her, Hare kesuva seich munachas ala shulchan, ela kol nechosiv achron leksuvasa. We're going to see now that the Yavam is not permitted to say to her, listen, you see that parcel of land, land A, that's your ksuva land. He's not permitted to say that. Rather, again, her lien devolves upon the entirety of the deceased husband's estate. This is not just true by Yivama. This is also true. A man may not say to his wife, Hare kesuva sayich munachas ala shulchan, ela kol nechosav achrayin leksuvasa. Well, it's very important you sowed. So a person can't say, that your ksuva, he can't say to his wife, listen, here's the deal. I'm going to pay your ksuva, but your ksuva comes from that parcel of land. Now, again, I want to be clear. If she agrees to that, bless you. If she agrees to that, then he can do that. But assuming she's not going to agree to it, she'd be crazy to agree to that. Her lien for her ksuva devolves upon all of his property. So because of that, halacha lemaaseh, he does not have the right to say, do what's called miyachid karka. He can't say, your ksuva is only coming from here. Rather, her lien is against everything. But once he divorces her, ein la ela ksuva. We'll say, we will see what this means. When he divorces her, all she has is her ksuva. And I'll say, now we will see exactly what this means. Bashas, what it means is that when he divorces her, he absolutely has the right to say, I'm paying you your ksuva from here. He does have the right to see, meaning she doesn't have the right to necessarily choose where she's getting her ksuva payment from. He has the right to say, ksuva payment is going to come from X. Last case in the Mishnah, Hechzira, if he remarries her after he divorces her, she is like any other woman, and we'll discuss exactly what this is, and she only has one ksuva. Now, I will say now what this is talking about is the following case. Let's say a man divorces his wife, and he didn't get a chance yet to pay her ksuva. And then what happens? They have a change of heart, and they decide they want to get back together. So they remarry. So let's say, so the Gemara Mishnah is saying is, she doesn't get two ksuvas, right? Meaning she doesn't, well, I never got paid out for my ksuva for my first marriage. So you still owe me that. Plus now I want a new ksuva for my second marriage. I mean, if he wants to, if he's a generous guy, he could do that. But the Gemara Mishnah is saying it doesn't work that way. If she has not yet got paid out for the first ksuva, then the assumption is what? That the second marriage will use what? That the ksuva that was set up for the first marriage. So again, in any case where after divorce there was not repayment of the first ksuva, and then they got remarried, in the absence of any other explicit stipulations, the assumption is that second marriage will also be based on the realities created by the first ksuva. All right, well, so stop by, we'll pick up with the Gemara tomorrow. Did they assign one or two or not?